One of our family's favorite movies is The Polar Express. It's set in the winter, and there's a little boy, and he gets on this train, and the train is headed to the North Pole. And he's really excited because he doesn't believe there's a Santa, so he's going to find out as he goes to the North Pole if this is really true or not. And while he's on the train, he makes friends with the little girl who sits across the aisle from him on the train. And at some point, it becomes clear she doesn't have a ticket to ride the train. And so the conductor takes her out the back of the train, and the boy's devastated. The girl's not gonna be able to make the ride. And somehow he finds the golden ticket, her ticket. And he's got in his hands, he's got a big smile, but he's got this look of concern. I've got to get this ticket to my friend. And he goes out the back of the train, and he climbs up on top of the train because it's clear that the conductor must have taken her up on top of the train. And so while the train's moving, he risks his life to find the girl to give her that ticket. And he gets partway down the train and he meets a hobo who just happened to be sitting there on the top of the moving train. And the boy says, "I'm looking for a girl." And the hobo, of course, he pauses and he bursts out laughing and he says, "Well, aren't we all? Aren't we all?" Well, maybe you're single like these two guys on the top of the train and you're looking for a good girl. Maybe you're a husband and you found a good girl and life has a way of bringing strain into a marriage. And perhaps today you're struggling to find the good in your girl. Maybe you're a young woman and you're wondering, where are my models? Who am I supposed to look at to figure out what it means to be a woman in this culture? And if you're a woman or a mom here today, you may be struggling to find your place in a culture that has some pretty warped ideas of what it means to be a mom and what it means to be a woman. Some of our warped cultural ideas come from advertising and has been pretty well documented. This woman has no wrinkles. She has no blemishes. She has no scars. She has impossibly long legs and a very tiny, tiny waist. She has a sense of style, and she's really well put together. You see, appearance in our culture is huge. Appearance. And doing is a big thing in our society, isn't it? A good mom in our culture may work outside the home, but she may also be expected to get as much done in the house as a stay-at-home mom does. And then our Christian culture has its own set of expectations that moms are going to have this dynamic devotional life of prayer and reflection on the scriptures and in solitude. And where do you get that when you have young children? They're going to volunteer at church, show up for work days, and their kids are going to be well-behaved and well-groomed. Then if you add the expectations that husbands have of their wives, it kind of kicks it up a notch. And then as one of our church friends mentioned this week, then you add upon it the expectations that women have of themselves. And before you know it, we have these super unrealistic expectations of what it means to be a mom in our culture. At some point, we have to realize that we cannot take the cues from our culture. At some point, we have to realize that we can't even take the cues from ourselves. We need to go to a higher authority. We need to ask ourselves, what is our Creator? Genesis 1:1, 2, 3 explains to us that God made man, that God made woman. And so we need to go back to see what does God say about what it means to be a mom. In Proverbs 31:10-31, you saw some of those things flash up on the screen earlier. If you want to look at it in the scriptures, we have some Bibles underneath the chairs there. They're red in color. This is on page 471. If you have the take-home is inserted in the bulletin. You can pull that out. What we're going to read is also printed in there. What we see here is that God is using a king. His name is Lemuel. And Lemuel is presumably an unmarried king. At some point, he was unmarried because his mother has been instructing him on what it means to find a good woman. And in ancient cultures, when the queen mother speaks, everyone listens. She is very influential. And so as she speaks today, we're going to listen. And she starts off by saying to Lemuel, "Do not spend your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings." And we believe this is a reference to the practice of ancient kings where they had many wives and they had many concubines. And I believe what Lemuel's mother is saying is, look, this is the way the kings of your day do this, but I don't want you to do it this way. I want to give you a different way of looking at women. I think what God's saying to us through this passage is, I want to show you a different way of looking at women and motherhood. Before we read it, I do have to acknowledge that when we read it in the English, it seems a bit disorganized. And there's a great reason for that, because we're reading it in the wrong language, so to speak. It was written in Hebrew. And if you read it in Hebrew, you actually read it backwards. For us, it'd be backwards. The way we read is backwards to people who would read Hebrew. But you're going to find that it's an acrostic. And if it was written in English, it would be like A, and then there'd be some sentences, and then it'd be B, and there'd be some sentences. So it's like an acrostic. So you'd be able to memorize it. You know, a good woman is A, whatever A would stand for. And that's what it looks like in the Hebrew Bible. So basically, these are the ABCs of a good woman. We see that she is a good wife. Look at verse 10. It says, a wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Okay, so we get it. This woman is very valuable. Why is she valuable? Verse 11. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. Verse 12. She brings him good and not harm all the days of her life. So this is my first reading of it. This is what pops up for me when I first read it, okay? Her attitudes and actions are basically flawless all the days of her married life. This guy doesn't have to worry about anything that pertains to her, and all the things that he has of value somehow are connected to being in relationship with her. I mean, what more could a guy ask for? This looks like the perfect wife right here at the beginning, right? Not only is she a good wife, she's also a good mother, we see. Verse 13, she selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. Okay, she can't wait to make clothing for her family. Verse 14, she's like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. Verse 15, she gets up while it is still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. Okay, so she gets up before everyone else. She gets ready to feed her family. And then as we understand what's being said here, she gives assignments to the servant girls as to what they're going to do for the day. Remember, Lemuel's mother would have been speaking to Lemuel, who would have been used to a woman who would have some means and have some wealth. And so this woman is just that. And so she has servants in her household. So not only is she a wife and a mother, but now we find out that she's a good investor. Verse 16, she considers a field and she buys it. Not of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She has the skills of a real estate agent and a real estate investor. And she starts a side business making grapes. I don't know if she's making wine or selling the grapes. Verse 17, she sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. Verse 18, she sees that her trading is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. Verse 19, in her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers, a reference to the spinning of yarn or thread. Okay, so she's as strong as a bodybuilder, apparently. She works very hard. She's successful in business. And not only that, a lot of us do all those kinds of things and then we feel kind of insecure about ourselves. Here it says she senses the value of her work. She knows that what she's doing for God is pretty cool, and she realizes this is good. God is blessing me here. And then, not only a wife, not only a mother, an investor, she's also a good humanitarian. Verse 20, she opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. 21, when it snows, she has no fear for her household. Apparently, she didn't live in New England this winter. All of the people in her household are clothed with scarlet. Verse 22, she makes coverings for her bed. She's clothed in fine linen and purple. So this woman provides stuff for people outside her family. And certainly there are lots of people in the world that do that. Sometimes they lose track of their own family in doing so. This woman doesn't do that. She doesn't lose track of her own family. She takes care of them as well. Everyone in the house is prepared for cold days, and you're probably thinking this is the Middle East. It doesn't snow in the Middle East, right? Well, actually it does in some of the higher elevations. And apparently Lemuel's mother was aware of that. In all of this, she doesn't skimp on herself either. Her bedroom looks like it come out of a Martha Stewart catalog. And she's dressed up in some pretty fancy clothes. Beyond her care for her family and beyond her care for the needy, she's also an influencer. Look at verse 23. Her husband is respected at the city gate where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. Okay, so she is credited with building her husband's reputation. You see that? Verse 24, she makes linen garments and she sells them and she supplies the merchants with sashes. Back in those days, they wore long robes, and so they needed sashes to hold up all that material, especially if they were working in the fields and things like that. So this woman has influence in the marketplace. She's selling this stuff, and she's doing well with it. Verse 25, she is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. This speaks to her outlook. This speaks to her attitude. She isn't worried about the future. She's ready for whatever comes. Verse 26, she speaks with wisdom and faithful instructions on her tongue. Like a good counselor, whenever she speaks, she's speaking blessing and she's speaking help into the lives of the people who she's with. Verse 27 says she watches over the affairs of her household and she does not eat the bread of idleness. So this woman influences her family. She's watching over everything that's going on in her family, and she's also setting a great example for her family. Now, what's the result of this? Verse 28 says, her children arise and call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praises her. Of course they do. Of course they do. What else would you do with a woman like this? You praise her. Verse 29, many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. I'll say. This is Wonder Woman. This is Superwoman. Now, similar, there's literature of that day. It's called hero literature, and I believe this would probably fit in with that. And I'll give you some reasons for that. We have to remember that this is Lemuel's mother. What mother wouldn't want a woman all put together like this for her son? Of course she would. And a woman like this would be running a large household and probably delegating many of these tasks. Remember David, he's credited with killing tens of thousands. Of course, David killed many people in defense of Israel, but he also had many generals who also killed many people. But David's credited with killing many of these people. Solomon is credited with building the temple, but it's not likely that Solomon was down on his hands and knees with the mortar and the bricks. He was leading the project. So I think you get an idea of kind of where this fits, right? That was my first reading of it. I'm like, God, really? Is this the ideal woman? No woman can match up to this. So we need to take a closer look at it. What is the point of having a reading like this? Why would God place a passage like this in his inspired word to us? And if we're to understand this passage, like, what is the key to understanding this passage? What unlocks it for you? Because when I read it the first time, and I was like, I don't get this. Look at verse 30. In my mind, this is the key to understanding the passage. It says, charm is deceptive. Charm is deceptive, and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. So when we read the word fear, we have a certain idea what that is. But in the Hebrew Bible, when we look at the word fear, it's about reverence, it's about respect, it's really about awe. This woman thinks that God is awesome, and she lives as though God is awesome. Proverbs 31 isn't about being perfect and doing all these things perfectly. It's really about the one who is perfect and following him. The point of the book of Proverbs, the whole book, is gaining wisdom. And this woman has gained wisdom from God, and it's inside of her, and it can't help but come out. And as we read about her, it's that wisdom coming out of her that we're reading about. So we have to look at the passage through that lens to really understand it. This woman doesn't do what she does for her husband. She doesn't do what she does for her kids. She doesn't do what she's doing for the poor. She doesn't do what she's doing for her community at large. She's not even doing things for her own benefit. She does it because she fears God. She does it because she wants to reflect the awesome God that she's serving. That's why she does these things. Now, how does God feel about a woman like this? At the beginning of the passage, it's pretty clear. The value of this woman surpasses any rubies. And the word rubies really could, you could substitute any precious stone in there. Think about the most precious stone to you. God says this woman is worth more than that precious stone. And it's not because of what she does. It's because of who she is. She's a God-fearing woman. And so it's out of that divine relationship with God that all these things spring out. So let's kind of look at them again. It's out of the divine relationship that she builds a trusting relationship with her husband, because she understands that her marriage is but a picture of something more glorious, the relationship between her and her ultimate husband, who is God. This is especially important in a culture like this. In a culture like this, women weren't regarded very well. And in some of these cultures, women were actually thought of as property. And in fact, because women were treated that way, women often did things that weren't honorable to their husbands. And that's why she mentions this woman is honorable with her husband. In fact, many husbands of this day would lock up their stuff. As we read ancient literature, they would lock up their stuff because they didn't want their wife to get at it during the day while they were away doing whatever they were doing. They didn't want their wife to get at the stuff, so they would lock it up. In contrast, God says here, not only can you trust this woman, in fact, she is so valuable, she is the thing you ought to treasure. Don't put your stuff in a treasure chest and lock it up when you go to work. Your wife is the treasure. It says that she has eager hands, and she puts them to work for her family's basic needs of food and clothes. Interestingly, in the New Testament, Paul tells us, if you have food and you have clothes, you should be content. Next, she seeks to be a good steward of her finances because she knows that ultimately those finances are God's. She works hard at whatever her hands find to do because she knows that whatever she's doing it for God. She opens up her arms and her hands to the poor and needy because she knows that she is but a channel of blessing through which God is channeling his blessings and resources to the people around her that need it. And when she decorates her home or when she decorates her body, she does it in a way that honors God because God is ultimate beauty. And the trusting relationship that she has with her husband actually blossoms so much that people beyond their home respect her husband more because he's in relationship with her. And it says that she can laugh at the days to come. Why? Because she knows who holds those days. She knows. And last, it says that she speaks with wisdom faithfully to those who need it because she has received wisdom from God. All right. Now, this is Mother's Day. Mother's Day is a very difficult day for a male pastor to try to speak into the lives of moms. So I can't tell you how to be a good mom. I have no idea. I've never been a good mom or a good woman, right? But I want to just shine a light on these scriptures because I believe they are an encouragement to moms. And it's a way for moms to look and say, really, how am I doing as a wife? How am I doing as a mother? So there are some questions that I believe come out of the text. They're in the take home if you want to look at them, and I'll just briefly read through them here. Are you building a trusting relationship with your husband? Are your hands eager to meet the basic needs of your family? Do you seek to be a good steward of that which God has entrusted into your care? Are you working hard at whatever your hands find to do because you're doing it for God? Are you a channel of blessing to the people that are around you that need the resources that you can help them with? When you decorate your home or body, do you honor God, who is the ultimate beauty? Do people respect your husband more because he's in relationship with you? Are you placing your future and the future of your family in God's hands? And the last one, are you sharing what wisdom you have gained from God with others? Today, I just want to encourage you. I don't think this passage is meant to pile on you and make your life harder. Forget what the culture expects of you and go back to the basics and ask God to help you with these things. And I just want to thank God publicly for all the many godly women in our church who, when you watch their life, they exude these principles that we're looking at this morning. It's such a blessing to see. It's such a blessing for me as a dad of three girls to know that there's so many women like that that my girls can look up to. All right, so that's the situation with moms, but a lot of us aren't moms in here, so I want to speak to you as well. What is this passage? What are the implications of this passage for us? Well, let me talk to the single guys. Are you a single guy? Though you need, like King Lemuel, to know what to look for in a godly woman, my suggestion would be that you not go out and look for a good woman. My suggestion would be that you ask the million-dollar question for every single guy. And that is, if a good single woman, like a Proverbs 31 woman, came near you, would she want to be with you? That's the million-dollar question. You need to focus on becoming the man of God that God wants you to be. He will bring along that woman and show you that in his time. And I want to encourage you not to take your cues from this culture. The scripture said it beautifully, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting. When I was a graduate student at Framingham State College, I had some friends that were in the psychology department with me, and we went out to eat one day, and we were eating, and they started talking about physical appearance, and they started getting a bit explicit, and I was like, God, I just want to crawl under the table. I want to like leave this conversation as soon as I can. And I feel like God was telling me to speak something into the conversation. And I was like, yeah, and what am I going to say? And I just blurted it out. I just said, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, wrinkles and sags and all this kind of stuff, you know, I've been married over probably 10 years at the time, and I was saying, that stuff that you're talking about isn't going to matter 10, 20, 30 years from now. Like, what are you going to base your relationships on? It's not all about the external. So for the single guys here, I would encourage you to ruthlessly cut out anything in your life that objectifies women. I think Mother's Day is an appropriate day for us to talk about this. Our culture has a lot of music lyrics that use lots of different names for women. The best Mother's Day gift that you can give your mom is to go home and delete those things from your playlist. And there's so much, you know, since I was a teenager and a young man, to today there's so much more sexually explicit material and media out there. The point is, single guys, the way that you treat women in private, in the privacy of your mind or your home, is eventually going to affect the way that you treat real women in public. So I want to encourage you. Remember, if you want a woman of character someday to come into your life, right now is your time to become a man of character, to let God shape you into that so you're ready for that Proverbs 31 woman when she comes. Now, if you're a husband here today, how do you speak about your wife in your home? That's what this reading is about today. In fact, this poem was recited in many homes, many Jewish homes, during the Sabbath. And on the Sabbath, it starts at Friday around 6 o'clock when the sun goes down. And in many Jewish homes, you would hear a reciting of this. Why could they recite it? Remember, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. In the Hebrew language, their own letters, they had this thing memorized. This was a ritualized blessing of the mother of that home. How will you praise your wife in your home? Maybe you could praise her like this. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Try that at lunch today. See how that goes. She'll probably laugh at you. That's okay. Maybe you'd say something like this. You are not just doing noble things. You are doing them for noble purposes. Because that's what this passage is about. Verse 31 says, give her the reward that she has earned and let her works praise her at the city gate. This brings up the question of how do we speak about our wives in public, when in the company of other people? Do you praise her or do you complain about her? You might say, but my wife isn't a Proverbs 31 type woman. Well, what is your wife like? Do you know what your wife does on a daily basis? Whenever I switch places with my wife, there's like light bulbs that go off, right? So one time my wife left and she left me with the kids, and I always try to take care of the kitchen after dinner. Like, she does a lot of work before dinner, and I'm like, all right, it's my job to clean up all the mess. Like, that's my thing. So I go in there and I'm focused on that kitchen. Well, meanwhile, my two youngest daughters have made their way into the bathroom with our dog, Murphy. And they're in there, and I hear that they're safe and everything, so I'm focused on that kitchen. Before I know it, I hear water running in the bathroom. But then, I mean, this is like real faint, like way off in the distance. They're still safe, and I'm working in the kitchen. And I heard a lot of rustling in there and banging and stuff like that. I go in there. My two daughters are in the shower, and Murphy, the dog, is also in the shower. And I open the door, and he's just looking at me like, get me out of here. See, when I switch places with my wife, I cannot keep track of all the things like she can keep track of them. And I'm always, I do a lot less complaining when I switch places with her and I realize all the things that she does. See, God is calling your wife to his purposes. And the question as a husband is, am I cooperating with the work that God wants to do in the life of my wife? You see, because I believe that God is going to hold husbands accountable for how we cooperated with God and his work that he's doing with our wives. So how will you cooperate with God, husbands? That's your Mother's Day question. And then I have a question for you. Are you a child? It's a trick question. All of us are children in the sense that we've had a mom or we still have a mom. The scripture says we ought to call her blessed. Young women here today, I want to encourage you to look at that list that's in the take home and look at it and see, does my mom emulate these traits here? How is your mom an example of those things? See, because you ought to be taking notes right now, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a mom, if God should call you to do that someday. You know, that's coming sooner than you think it is. It'll be on you before you know it. You are in mom school right now. Right now, you're preparing for your future. So emulate the good you see. The Apostle Paul says, as I follow Christ, follow me. As your mom follows Christ, follow what your mom is doing. And let your mom know that you appreciate her. Young women, this is a mark of maturity. When you can look at a parent, when you can look at your mom and say, Mom, I see these good qualities in you. Thank you for following Jesus so that I can follow Jesus too. You might say, but my mom isn't anything like a Proverbs 31 woman. Well, the question is not that. The question is, are you going to speak blessing? Are you going to call her blessed? The scripture says that we honor father and mother. It doesn't say that father and mother need to be honorable for us to honor them. It says that we honor them. And we do it not for ourselves, and we do it not for our parents' sake. We do it because we're in relationship with God, and he's told us to honor these people who have brought us into the world. To honor them, to love them, to bless them, because we are one of God's instruments speaking into the lives of even our parents. Now, some of us today have a unique experience that our moms are no longer with us, and how do we remember them? Some of us, you know, focus on all the ways our mom has gotten it wrong, had gotten it wrong through the years. I want to encourage you, today may be the day that you decide to give up resentment, the day that you decide to give up the bitterness. Because let's face it, not all of our moms got it right. Some of us lived through some difficult times with our moms. I know people that have lived into their 60s and 70s and held on to years of resentment and bitterness. And to watch them let go of that, to watch them let those things go, it's just amazing to watch their faces brighten, for their shoulders to no longer slump. I hope if you're in that place today, today might be the day that you let it go. And last today, I'm going to come back to the moms. Are you a mom? If you didn't hear anything I said today, that's fine. I hope you hear this last part. God can use you to change the world. And some of you are doing that every single day. And it starts out and flows out of a relationship with Jesus. And moms, bear with me here, because oddly enough, I'm going to end with a football illustration. You'll see what I mean at the end. All over the news this week, we heard about Deflategate. It took them a long time and over 200 pages to explain how a few people may have influenced the underinflation of a handful of footballs during this playoff game this past year. This is an example of something that our culture sees as very important. Moms, I don't think anybody here on this earth is going to investigate and produce a report on all the important things that you do in a day's work of serving God. But I want you to know the reason that we aren't producing those reports about all the ways that God is using you to change the world. It's because we don't have enough time. It's because we don't have enough paper to keep up with all the stuff that you do and that you do for God. So report or not today, we will still bless you. Your works will be praised in the city gates. And if you follow Jesus with all your heart, I believe you're going to hear God say to you, "Well done, my good and faithful servant."